Today's episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Season 2 of the podcast Blowback. It's exclusively available on Stitcher Premium. After a critically acclaimed retelling of the Iraq War, Season 2 of Blowback, co-hosted by Brendan James and Noah Culwin, who was on the other day on this program, is a 10-part account of the unlikely story of the Cuban Revolution. It's a nuclear-tipped showdown between the Kennedy brothers, Fidel Castro, the Soviet Union, the CIA, and the Mafia. To listen now and get a free month of Stitcher Premium, go to stitcher.com/premium and enter the promo code MAJORITY when you select a monthly plan. That's stitcher.com/premium, promo code MAJORITY. Now, for this show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Tuesday, May 18th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, journalist Steve Charles, professor of media, cities, and solutions at Temple University, host of BET's News, Black News Tonight, and author of Except for Palestine, The Limits of Progressive Politics, Mark Lamont Hill, will be here. Also on the program today, Joe Biden finally calls for a ceasefire as Israelis continue to pummel Palestinians. Over 200 Palestinian civilians killed, including over 60 children. That's the Supreme Court. Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health could be the case that cripples Roe v. Wade protections. U.S. announces it will ship 20 million additional vaccine doses abroad. These are FDA approved as opposed to the AstraZeneca, which we've promised, but have yet to approve. New report, Trump's DOJ tried to force Twitter to reveal the identity of Devin Nunes' cow, that anonymous handle that mocked Devin Nunes. In fact, there was a subpoena that was revoked revoked once Biden got in office. Meanwhile, congratulations, Andrew Cuomo, it's revealed, is set to earn $5 million from his COVID leadership book. Congratulations, not in the humor section. The National Labor Relations Board examining possible election infractions by Amazon at the Bessemer warehouse in Alabama. And new report, people who work over 55 hours a week have a big increase in stroke and heart disease risk. South Carolina governor signs a bill forcing death row inmates to choose the electric chair or firing squad. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program. With me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Emma, how are you?
I am well. How are you, Sam?
I am good. Just waiting for that one day when you say, like, fair.
Well, I guess I am fair today.
Well, come on. It's too late.
Okay.
You're locked in to good. We'll take that. And then if you want to say you're fair a different day, you can do that.
But I'll map it
can't,
out.
Can't switch it up.
Yeah, right.
Now that I remind you that you could be fair. We got a lot to talk about today. Thanks for joining us. Let's get right into this here. We still have a horrible situation with Israeli warplanes, their supposed precision guided weapons, killing well over dozens of children now, over 200 civilians. There have been limited civilian casualties. I don't know that there's been any in the past couple of days on the Israeli side. The Palestinians don't have the ability to guide their weapons. We will talk about that with Mark Lamont Hill, because that has implications in terms of the International Criminal Court, which is examining, and even prior to this conflict, although I imagine they're going to take it up for this conflict as well, human rights violations and war crimes charges against both the Israeli government and Hamas. So we will talk about that in just a few. But here is Anthony Blinken. He is in Denmark, and he's being asked about what the U.S. is doing to slow things down. And this is, remember, the U.S. has stopped at least three attempts by the UN, for what it's worth. But I mean, there's only so much that other countries can do theoretically for calling for a ceasefire. The Biden administration just announced a day ago that they're going to send $730 million worth of weaponry to Israel. But here is Anthony Blinken just talking about it as if it's all happening. There's no active role for anybody to take.
The United States remains greatly concerned by the violence, by the escalating violence. Hundreds of people killed or injured, including children being pulled from the rubble. We're also alarmed by how journalists and medical personnel have been put at risk. Palestinians and Israelis, like people everywhere, have the right to live in safety and security. This is not an Israeli privilege or a Palestinian privilege. It's a human right. And the current violence has ripped it away. So we've been working intensively behind the scenes to try to bring an end to the conflict.
First off, why has it taken over a week for the U.S. government to say that Palestinians have a right to safety and security?
To even mention them.
To even say the word Palestinian. And this notion that we've been working quietly behind the scenes, well, I mean, it seems hard to believe that's the case, but let's assume that it is. It's been incredibly ineffective. And the sort of public, and I guess you could say it's also behind the scenes, earmarking of $730 million worth of weaponry, it seems to, like, I don't know, maybe you're not using your, maybe not putting your best foot forward.
Yeah, maybe not putting the screws on if you come from these behind the scenes negotiations and the result is that we're going to give Israel more weaponry. As if they need more. I thought about this the other day, and we had Jeremy Scahill on to talk about Biden's foreign policy history. Back in 2001, after George W. Bush publicly said something critical of Israel, or criticized their assassination of some Palestinian militants, Joe Biden said, "My view has always been that disagreements between Israel and the United States, those differences should be aired privately, not publicly." So that does inform a little bit of what they are saying, right? They're standing with Israel publicly, and behind the scenes, they're apparently dealing with this conflict. But the proof is in the pudding of what those private dealings have created, what the yield has been. And it's been a continued emboldening of the Israeli government to continue to indiscriminately commit war crimes, shooting down buildings that contain press outlets. I mean, they attacked Palestine's only coronavirus testing center and their health ministry. So none of these supposed private dealings are doing anything to help at all. And I think that's by design.
Two of the Gaza's top trauma doctors also killed in the bombing. And
as you've mentioned, Israel has the ability to target their strikes. Palestine or Palestinians, Hamas, whatever, they don't. So this is deliberate when they're going after these kinds of this kind of infrastructure.
And there's only now a couple of days worth of fuel, and they're anticipating widespread power outages in Gaza. And we should say that is normalcy, where they have limited power on any given day. So it's just a horrible situation there. And the Biden administration just seems to be dragging their feet, hoping this whole thing goes away. And I think it is a different era. And so but we will be talking to Mark Lamont Hill about that in a moment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And when we do come back, we'll be talking to Mark Lamont Hill, author of Except for Palestine, The Limits of Progressive Politics. Meanwhile, a couple of words from our sponsors today. One of our sponsors, we've talked about in the past, GiveWell.org. Since 2010, GiveWell.org has helped over 50,000 donors find places where their donations can save or improve lives the most. Giving to an effective charity, you got to do some research. Well, that's the whole point of GiveWell. They've done the research. They give. They have recommended charities. They have rigorous academic independent studies of the effectiveness of their programs. And GiveWell dedicates over 20,000 hours a year to researching charitable organizations, and they handpick a few of the highest impact evidence-based charities. Donors have used GiveWell to donate more than $750 million. These donations save over 75,000 lives and improve the lives of millions more. And here's the best part. GiveWell is free. So GiveWell doesn't take a cut of your donation. They allocate your tax-deductible donation to the charity you choose. So they're just basically a portal, and they have done all this research for you. Plus, they publish all of their research on their site for free so donors can understand their work, their methodology, and their recommendations. For me, there's a couple of charities I found through GiveWell, but the one that I really have been consistently giving to is, and I don't think it's related, although it's the first name, is GiveDirectly. And they basically, you give them a dollar, and 87 cents of it, I believe it is, or 83 cents of it, goes directly into the hands of people they're trying to help. And one of the things, there's been a tremendous amount of evidence over the years, particularly during COVID, frankly, that the best way to deal with poverty, including like extreme poverty, is just to give people money. They know how to spend it the best. And so I found GiveDirectly through there. There's also a couple other charities that I've gone through, but GiveDirectly has been the one that I've sort of consistently been giving, and I found it through GiveWell. So if you've never donated to GiveWell's recommended charities before, you can have your donation matched up to $1,000 before the end of June or as long as matching funds last. Just go to GiveWell.org/majority, pick podcast and the majority report at checkout, and they will match you up to $1,000. That's GiveWell.org/majority. Make sure to select podcast and the majority report at checkout and get your donation matched. Also, today's program sponsored by, you can tell me what it is. What do I have every morning? Usually in my Jeb cup.
Magic spoon.
Bingo. Magic Spoon has amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, only 140 calories a serving. It's keto friendly, it's gluten free, it's grain free, it's soy free, it's low carb, it's GMO free. And we got exciting news. Magic Spoon has released a super delicious new flavor, birthday cake.
What? Like the birthday cake ice cream flavor?
I guess. I have no idea. I've not tried this.
That's a weakness of mine.
You should try it out. Birthday cake Magic Spoon will soon be available in a special 5-pack for a limited time only. So get it while you can, Emma. Or you can build your own box. Available flavors to build your own very custom bundle. Cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, and cinnamon. I would go with like a one cocoa, one peanut butter, 3 cinnamon. That's the way I roll.
Peanut butter's really good too.
Yes. If you're listening from Canada, Magic Spoon now ships there as well. Folks, my kids, me, it is become a staple of my breakfast. And frankly, when I'm here, I'm hitting like a little, somebody asked me last time, do I do the serving size? And I don't know.
What do you mean, do you do their serving size?
Well, you know, like the serving size is a certain amount. And I just keep filling up this Jeb cup, and it's like a snack for me. Go to magicspoon.com/majorityreport to grab the new limited edition birthday cake or custom bundle of cereal to try it today. Be sure to use our promo code MajorityReport at checkout to save $5 off your order. This offer is now good anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. Remember, magicspoon.com/MajorityReport and use the code MajorityReport to save $5 off. Lastly, are you hiring for spring? What kind of role are you hiring for? Maybe you need to hire somebody who wears many hats. Around this place, everybody around here does like 14 different jobs. That can be challenging. Maybe you have a simple position to fill, but it's taking forever to find somebody who's a great fit for your company. That's where ZipRecruiter comes in. I've talked about ZipRecruiter for years now. I've used it. That's how we got Brendan. And the best part about ZipRecruiter is not only, it's not like just like a regular job posting board. They go out and find candidates. They found Brendan, invited him to apply for the job, and it was a perfect match. ZipRecruiter can help you find qualified candidates fast, and now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Maybe you need to hire a civil engineer in New York. Maybe you're in Nebraska, pediatric nurse, an attorney in Colorado, doesn't matter, a mascot in Missouri, a producer in Brooklyn. ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. Like I said, that's what they did with Brendan. We got a bunch of good candidates at that time. And I'm telling you, folks, the best time to do this is when you don't need to hire somebody. Go out there, see what's out there, figure out how the best way to find the person you're looking for. It's so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day, from accountant to zoologist and everything in between. That's A to Z. I don't know if you picked up on that.
Oh, yeah.
ZipRecruiter makes hiring easier. And right now, you can try it for free at only our listeners get it link. That is only listeners of the Majority Report. You ready?
Yes.
ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. If you go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority today, try ZipRecruiter for free. We get credit for sending you. That's the way it works. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. MAJORITY. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Also, just want to remind you, it is your support that makes this show possible. When you become a member of this show, you support the free half. You get it free of commercials. And you also then get the fun half. And I want to take this opportunity right now to play a shofar for one of our Fun Half regulars. Haven't heard from him in a while. He hasn't been around his computer because I think he's...
You're going to need to tell me who this is before
it is Lawyer Matthew.
Ah.
But Lawyer Matthew may not be Lawyer Matthew for much longer. He has just been nominated a Democratic Party nominee for town justice in his town.
Wow.
So he could end up being Judge Matthew. We'll see. Justice Matthew. We might do that. All right. Are we waiting on our guest? All right. Let's take a let's play some music for a bit, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, folks, live streaming, I guess. These things happen. We do not have Mark Lamont Hill today. We will endeavor to get him another day. In the meantime, though, we have news to discuss regarding the ongoing. I mean, you call it a conflict, I guess, but. Let's be honest what the dynamic is here. There is one side that has overwhelming force and is pounding the other side. We mentioned earlier that there have been calls for the ICC war crimes, for the International Criminal Court to probe the Israeli strikes on Gaza homes. This is what I was sort of getting at earlier. The attacks, you are not allowed under international law to have indiscriminate killings of civilians. And there must be some type of argument that there is, that these are unintentional. And I guess, I mean, you know, this is the parameters. Unintentional killing of civilians that are simply collateral damage to a targeted attack on a military installation. Because Hamas does not have the ability to target their so-called rockets, which, you know, rockets is really a term that I think gives you an incorrect notion of what's going on here. These are essentially like...
It's generous.
Well, it's generous to the extent that of what these things are. They're like very high-powered fireworks. And, of course, fireworks can be lethal, but there's no real targeting capacity at all with these. They don't have the ability to destroy buildings. They can hurt people. Shrapnel can spread. And so there are concerns that if the ICC looks at both sides here, by the very nature of the weapons that are available to Hamas, they are only, any civilians that are killed are done so in a random manner because they don't have the ability to target their weapons in the first place. So the structure of these investigations and these charges necessarily make it hard to imagine that the criminal court wouldn't at least find, you know, both sides guilty of war crimes, which, and again, we should be clear, this is really about world public opinion and about creating pressure. And having lived through the era where there were pushes to divest and boycott South Africa over its apartheid regime, it takes a while for this to build. But it's interesting in just doing research on Lamont Hill's book, and we should say that he had written it with Mitchell Plitnick. The change in public opinion, as evidenced by the number of Democratic politicians you have now on the right, there has been no change whatsoever. But you now have Democratic party elected officials who are on the floor of the House calling for ending financial support to Israel. You have them calling out the Israeli government for killing civilians. This just didn't happen 6-7 years ago. And we have more widespread sort of popular culture appreciation for this. And I mean, on some level, there's still this dynamic with certain cohorts of people, but the phenomena of progressive except for Palestine is becoming less prominent. I mean, it just simply is. And so this is, I think, in my estimation, a good thing to happen. It is insufficient, but it is necessary before we get to the point where there is bigger pressure on the leadership of the Democratic Party to start taking different positions on this. And, they also make the point in that book that the things Trump did, for instance, the moving of the embassy to Jerusalem, which we should say on day one, Biden said, we're not reversing that. The authority to do that had actually been granted by Congress in the mid-90s. I think it was in 96. However, it was continuously since that time, prior to Donald Trump, 30 years, waived. The authority was waived each time. And so the authority existed. The apparatus was there. It was just that we ended up getting a president who was going to make use of that. And he did. And that's, you know, that's been the Israeli modus operandi for decades now. Facts on the ground become much harder to reverse. And that's what we have now. Here is, and we still see, you know, figures in the media, but they're becoming more and more anachronistic sounding, right? Here is Jeremy Bash. This is the former chief of staff at the CIA and the Defense Department under Barack Obama. He's on with Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC. And this is now we're at the point where it's, you know, the idea that Israel needs to defend itself is not sufficient of an answer in this context, because there's no existential threat. Is there a threat arguably to some of its citizens? Yes, but it's not nearly commensurate with the threat that they pose towards Palestinians.
Well, what's repeated, though, is, well, Hamas they believe in the extinction of the Jewish state and of Zionists, etc. My response to that is, just because Netanyahu says it politely and the right-wing government of Israel doesn't come out loud and say we want to eliminate and basically commit cultural genocide against Palestinians, doesn't mean that isn't the entire goal.
Oh, well, I mean, of course.
But
when you are dispossessing all of these Palestinians in East Jerusalem, when you are engaging in ethnic cleansing, when you are preventing them from having any legitimate sense of autonomy, you are also denying the Palestinians the right to exist. And you know, the difference is maybe rhetorical, but beyond the rhetorical difference, you can simply see, just by body count,
the difference is power.
Right.
The
you can see by body count. That's the only measure there. But all right, let's listen to Jeremy Bash.
We've hit communities in Jerusalem. And so for the United States, I think the priority is to get pressure on Hamas to stop the rocket attacks. Of course, no one wants to see the loss of life, and the heartbreaking images from Gaza are terrible to watch. But we got to make clear, in terms of our values, in terms of our morals, that the people who bear the responsibility for this are the Hamas terrorists who put rockets in kindergartens, in hospitals, under civilian places like apartment buildings. And that is the moral outrage that should come from Capitol Hill, from the UN, and from the West.
But let me just also point out, to play devil's advocate here, the Israeli bombing is more or less indiscriminate. If they say that there's a Hamas intelligence office, they take down an entire tower of journalists and their offices. They gave them notice to get out, but then argued against 10-minute extension that the owner of the building was pleading for to try to get the equipment out. So all of their equipment, their transmission abilities, their archives are gone forever.
Yeah, I think, Andrea, there are three legs to the Israeli defense stool, if you will. One is their civil defense, their red alert sirens and their bomb shelters. The second is Iron Dome, their missile defense. And both are designed to actually give Israel some decision space before they have to launch offensive operations. But they cannot degrade Hamas's infrastructure just passively defensively. They have to take targeted strikes against Hamas. And by the way, if they didn't, Hamas would just shoot more rockets at Israel. And so no military in the world, in fact, I was in the Pentagon during the 2012 Gaza War, and military leaders in the U.S. Department of Defense said to me, he said, no country in the world except Israel calls ahead and says, we're going to give you an hour before we strike a terrorist target. We don't do that in the United States. We've never done that. Yet Israel does it precisely because, as I said, Hamas uses human shields.
First off, there is no analogy. We do not have an open air prison that we control the borders of. So just to say that analogy, I mean, this is they're shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, almost literally. And the idea that we should give some enormous credit because they call an hour in advance and say, hey, we're about to take out this huge building so that really ultimately there's no media infrastructure, is just absurd. But it's also just absurd that Andrea Mitchell can only come up with, well, what about this media? Like, okay, let's be clear what Israel's doing. Israel does not want images of the killing of all the children. Does not want images of the killing of all the children to be broadcast on the news. And so the idea that, like, you know, the only way for Israel to defend itself is to kill all these civilians. It is just, first of all, it is not. It's just absolutely, utterly bizarre. If you want to protect your citizens, how about not unjustly dispossessing and engaging in ethnic cleansing? Like, I mean, this is it's disturbing that there are people listening to that and actually buying what Jeremy Bash is saying. And I like the idea that, frankly, there should be only a representative from the Defense Department or the CIA on a television program with no one there to refute, but except for a devil's advocate advocating on behalf of the AP journalist.
She was being cautious there. But like saying, but that's just what I think is the difficulty surrounding this conversation. But I want to just get, you know, to the meat of what Bash was saying there. One, Hamas is using human shields. That's his claim as to why it was justified to blow up an office building that contained Al Jazeera and AP offices, because there were Hamas militants or there were Hamas operations happening in that office building. Blinken and the United, and that they shared that intelligence with the United States. Blinken said that they didn't get that information, or they didn't respond to request for comment there. So that has not been
established
whatsoever. And you should never believe what the Israeli government is claiming in this instance. You should never believe what any government is claiming. The second thing that pro-Israel hawks like Bash like to do is conflate Hamas with the Palestinian people. That is like conflating the Likud party with the entire population of Israel. And the right-wing government of Israel, led by Netanyahu, commits terroristic acts just like they're claiming that Hamas does, right? And Hamas, yes, does in many instances, has targeted civilians and has killed civilians. But that's the way they're trying to change the conversation here. They're trying to make the entire population of Palestine, all of the Palestinian people, and shoehorn them into this narrow definition of what Hamas
militants.
Says. Hamas is their arm, right? That's not what is happening here. And then just the point about what kind of civilian killings get credence in these conversations and which ones don't. State violence done by an established country by Israel and them killing civilians, well, you know, that's just self-defense. But when Palestine does it, when Palestinians try to defend themselves and lash out based on the apartheid and the killing and the lack of clean water and the lack of electricity and health care and COVID vaccines and COVID testing, and then it hits an inflection point, that's what needs to be demonized, not the state violence that caused it at the beginning. And so this is the dance that we do all the time. And it's such a shallow, hawkish, racist assumption that just follows power, because Israel has the power, Israel has the money, so their violence and their murder is way more legitimate and justified. And that's what the cycle of this conversation is. And it's maddening.
The other thing that journalists, I think, should demand in this type of situation, when there is a claim that there was Hamas assets there, like exactly what are we talking about, right? They are attempting to paint this picture that like they had some type of, you know, howitzer on the 15th floor,
yeah,
and they were firing out of this building. Hamas is also the administrative state in Gaza, to the extent that there is one.
Yes, exactly.
Right. I mean, it would be the functional equivalent of Hamas saying, look, we're only attacking Israeli, not the people, but the governmental apparatus, which is why we hit that bus stop. Right. That bus is an Israeli government bus. I mean, they need to be more explicit so that we and the world can make an assessment as to whether that warranted the death of the trauma doctors, or whether that warranted the death of, civilian children. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know what it is that would warrant it in my mind, but they don't even bring up that equation. They obscure that by this sort of like you say, this vague notion of Hamas. As soon as they say Hamas, it is just, it's a terrorist cell that's there, as opposed to like, well, maybe they had, I don't know, like the phone system, to the extent that it worked, was, you know, at working out of there. Maybe parts of the internet apparatus were working. I don't know. But we're not allowed to know, because if we knew, and by we, I mean just to the general population, they'd be like, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense at all. And that is a failure of, and frankly, let's be honest, certainly not just a function of MSNBC. I mean, Mark Lamont Hill was fired from CNN for a speech he gave, not even on CNN.
Yep.
And, you know, Wolf Blitzer used to work for AIPAC. There is a hegemony in broadcast media that I think is starting to erode when you have folks like Ali Velshi and Mehdi Hassan actually discussing these things in a...
And if you're having an honest conversation, I'm sorry, so if we were having an honest conversation about Hamas, like, is it a shock that the body that Palestinians have chosen to represent them are hawkish and want to retaliate against the
of course
against the government that oppresses them? But that just means they're terrorists, right? Like, there's not even an attempt at a shallow understanding of what happens when you oppress a people for decades and decades, and then they try to create their own leadership, and then this is what happens. And there's no fundamental difference between there's no actual value difference in the bodies that are, in terms of just like one life killed by the Israeli government versus one life killed by Hamas, right? But the devaluation of the bodies killed by the Israeli government is based on that notion of power and or lack thereof, and racism and Islamophobia, even though, of course, not all Palestinians are Muslim. But that is at the root of a lot of it. And it's just... Yeah.
Here is Representative Elisa Slotkin. She is a Democratic congresswoman from Michigan, I believe, right? And
New York. Oh, Elise Slotkin. Sorry. Yep. Yes.
And she's a former CIA Middle East analyst. And she's on with Poppy Harlow on CNN.
I'd like to change topics if I could, Congresswoman, before you go, and ask you about the ongoing violence between Israeli forces and Hamas and what is come out of a number of progressives within your party that would like to hear the Biden administration speak more forcefully against Israel than it has. And I thought it was notable that the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, just a few hours ago reiterated Israel's right to defend itself, as the U.S. has always said. But he went on to say, I believe Israel as a democracy has an extra burden to do everything possible to avoid civilian casualties. Your Democratic colleague in the House, Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman, tweeted this: Israel targeting media sources is so the world can't see Israel's war crimes led by the apartheid in chief Netanyahu. Those are incredibly strong words. What is your response to her? Do you agree with those progressives in your party on this?
Well, listen, I mean, I don't think anyone likes to see what's going on their televisions. It's devastating right now. And I'm literally getting texts and messages from people saying, please, like, please make sure that there's awareness on what's going on here, frankly, on both sides of the issue. I think that this issue, again, becomes something where we just sort of like play back and forth. It's like ping pong. And, you know, what I'm seeing right now is civilians losing their lives on both sides. What I see right now are people trying to defend themselves, first and foremost in Israel, but also now inside of Israel. There are gangs and roving sort of groups of thugs that are threatening and beating people up. I mean, it is devastating to watch. And I think the more we say you have to come down on one side or the other, the more we lose sight of like this systemic problem when people don't have a two-state solution.
So just to be very clear for our viewers, are you saying then you do not believe the Biden administration position and word choice should change at all here? You're comfortable with the statements coming out of the administration?
I think people need to read them for what they are, which is Israel has a right to defend itself and the Palestinians have a right to live in security and safety, and all human beings have dignity. And that, I believe, is what they're trying to say. That is what I am saying, certainly. And I think that's extremely lost in the debate right now.
I mean, the idea that the critique is only about the rhetoric on both sides. that there is no addressing of the material realities. Look, the United States can try and pressure Hamas all it wants. There is no, and to the extent that they can, they are. They are arming the Israelis. They are providing Israelis with warplanes and missiles and guns and targeting. All of these things have been provided by the United States that is acting as a mechanism to attempt to discipline the Palestinian people. Let's be honest here. They've killed more civilians than they have militants. And so it's and they have hit civilian targets, like we just saw with that building, for instance. Nobody's expressed any military value there, just the fact that Hamas may have had an office in there. So the United States is certainly exerting influence on the Palestinian people. It is doing it through its proxy, Israel, but it is not in, it is not exercising any influence on Israel. None. And that is, well, that's the point, is that, like, you know, if you don't want to address this, if you don't want to address it, but you also realize that you have to address it, you talk about the rhetoric on both sides.
Right.
Or you talk about the rhetoric on one side, because the rhetoric is irrelevant. The relevance is, what can the United States do to influence the supposed outcome that you want in this instance? And it is quite easy. It can say to Israel, you cease your flights, you cease the bombing.
Or we retract our aid. I mean, that's what your gets aid lost is tied in this conversation.
This. And you stop dispossessing Palestinians.
We sold them more arms. Yeah. We just sold them more arms. I mean, that's what, like, of course, you know, honestly, that's better than what would have come out of an Elise Slotkin type 6 years ago, by the way.
Yes, that's true.
But it's, of course, woefully insufficient for all these reasons that you just stated. I've said this point before, but I think it's a good lens to look at this through. When you both sides this conflict, right? Or conflict. When you both sides this apartheid and you make it as if there's just, oh, they can't get along. Two sides that are just both fighting and there's, you know, so complicated, right? It obscures the power dynamics in such a way that you're doing what right-wingers did in this country, talking about police brutality, when you said Black Lives Matter and you say all lives matter, right?
Right.
You are not looking at the issue. You are actually sapping the conversation of the necessary context to move forward in a productive way. And that's by design by people like Elise Slotkin, who obviously has a history, she was a CIA representative in the Middle East. This is not going to be the person who's going to change the conversation around Israel-Palestine. But, you know, I mean, that's what that kind of talk is designed to do, but it's given some sort of credence as if she's saying anything remotely substantive or relevant to addressing what's the root of what's happening there.
This is what's also interesting that's happening around the world in some places anyways. Folks are familiar with the BDS movement. It is the boycott divestiture movement. And in this country, there are 34 states, I think it is, that make it illegal for you to support this boycott or divestiture. I mean, it's always just sort of ridiculous to even articulate this, but it's the case. It will, if there's any evidence that you have done that in your private life, then you are ineligible to receive a state contract to work in any capacity for the state or with the state. So there was a case in Texas where someone was a speech therapist and was coming in helping children who had special needs for speech therapy, school kids. But because they had expressed in some venue support for boycotting Israeli products that were made in the West Bank.
She was of Palestinian descent, I believe.
Denied a contract. It's just absurd. They tried to pass this in the Senate. Fortunately, it failed. This is the sort of level of in this country of selective, I guess, application of censoring that is okay. You don't hear a lot of those, some of those free speech, you know, I don't recall that episode that Sam Harris did, for instance, on criticizing the BDS. Maybe he did. I shouldn't point him out. Maybe he did. I just didn't hear it. But the point is that, you know, all of these people are talking about American values and whatnot. Meanwhile, around the world, there are unions who are beginning to show some measure of solidarity with the Palestinian people who are being subject to, you know, a slaughter. And in Italy, Italian dock workers refused to load arms onto a ship that they were in Naples and Livorno. They would not load arms that were destined for Israel. Here is a speaker at a Palestinian solidarity campaign in London calling on union dock workers to follow those Italian workers' lead.
We have seen McCall responded to by dock workers in Italy. They have refused to load weapons due for Israel onto ships to use against Palestinians. I am calling to all of the unions in this country. The dock workers refuse to load the weapons. I am calling to the people that work in the factories. You have 10 different sites for Elbit Systems, the Israeli arms company in this country. Refuse to build those weapons of war. Refuse to comply. 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 Refuse.
So there's, you know, attempts to basically just sort of putting their labor to use, or they're withholding their labor so that, you know, literally the Israelis can't have the weapons to continue to kill civilians. And, you know, everyone knows. I mean, it's not like you can't really say that this is collateral damage if everyone knows it's going to happen. And everybody knows that the Israelis have had many, many statements in the past. We're going to put them on a diet. We're going to mow the lawn. Every now and then you have to mow the lawn. These are just, you know, we've had these over the years and years. Lastly, let's play this clip of Tom Cotton. And again, the salience of this is very different on the right in this country than it is on the ostensible left. It is changing, at least, you know, and I'm talking center left to left. But on the right, with conservatives, there's no question whatsoever. They have no, there's no hesitation. And here is Tom Cotton skipping right over the fact that, like, wait, we haven't seen the military value of the supposed presence of Hamas in this building. He's skipping right over that to actually demonizing the other people who were in the building.
Why is the Associated Press sharing a building with Hamas? Surely these intrepid reporters knew who their neighbors were. Did they knowingly allow themselves to be used as human shields by a U.S.-designated terrorist organization? Did the AP pull its punches and decline to report for years on Hamas's misdeeds? I submit that the AP has some uncomfortable questions to answer.
This is Alex Jones stuff. I mean, was the AP aware that Hamas was in Gaza? Did they ever report that Hamas was in Gaza?
I don't know. I mean, I would think that they were just there to...
Why isn't the AP sending coordinates for every bombing run that the Israelis are going to do?
They were covering traffic in Gaza. I thought that was really what the whole purpose of what the AP was there, not anything about the governmental structure there. I mean, the idea that journalists are there to be human shields for terrorists.
Those are some brave journalists.
Right.
You're really going full on.
My point is, one, you know, okay, the U.S. designates Hamas a terrorist organization. I give zero credence to what the United States says in this conflict, by the way. But, I mean, take that point. Say what you will with that, right? What Tom Cotton is trying to engender is more vile hatred of the press as essentially terrorist defenders. I mean, take that step further.
It's a twofer, yeah.
It's a twofer. But this goes back to why he's one of the most dangerous people in our government. Top three, I would say, right now, at least. He's got real fascist tendencies.
Yep. Yep. Harvard educated, very worried about the elite.
I'm really impressed by those AP reporters, though, putting their bodies on the line like that, going undercover, covering for Hamas. My estimation of that organization has gone up a lot.
They get some extra bonus pay for that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to change topics a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about this case, Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health, which is going to have could have serious implications for a woman's right to choose in this country. We'll be right back after this. Okay, you may have heard the news yesterday that it broke sometime after during the recording of the show. I'm not quite sure when it was yesterday. But the Supreme Court announced yesterday that it is going to hear Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Organization. They will not hear this until October. So they're actually making a decision for the next term. I think their term ends sometimes in June and July is when all the... Depends on how many cases they have backed up. And they'll hear this in October. They will probably come out with a ruling sometime around this time, actually, between now and June of, I should say, May of 2022, June 2022, around there. It will be the first major case. Well, really, the first case that has a head-on attack at Roe v. Wade. This is a Mississippi law that prohibits nearly all abortions after the 15th week of pregnancy. That means prior to what the Supreme Court has considered viability. Supreme Court does not consider a fetus to be viable until after sometime after week 20, 23. And this Mississippi law prohibits all abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy, except in a medical emergency or the case of a severe fetal abnormality. The Supreme Court has said a state may not prohibit any woman from making the ultimate decision to terminate a pregnancy before viability. This is a direct assault on that precedent. We should just say that a conservative federal appeals court struck down the Mississippi law because of that existing Supreme Court precedent. The Supreme Court does not need to take this case. There are hundreds of cases that the Supreme Court can take any term. And there are certain situations where they almost feel compelled to take it because maybe two circuits disagree. So there's a disagreement on the highest level of the appellate federal judiciary. But there are other times where the Supreme Court looks around at what's happening down below there and pulls one out and says, we're going to hear this. And that's what they did this time. Now, the last law that came up, last case about Supreme Court, was a Louisiana law that was what is known as a trap law. These are targeted restrictions on abortion providers. And that is basically when they say, like, okay, you can't provide abortions unless you have a 30 foot ceiling in the facility and where you're providing those abortions. It's a law that's like clearly has nothing to do with anything other than to restrict abortions. They struck down a Texas law about 3 or 4 years ago, a trap law. When they heard this Louisiana law, John Roberts basically said, and then remember, the Supreme Court at that time was 5-4. John Roberts basically said, look, it's too close to the Texas law. Just by the principle of respecting precedent, we're going to reject, or I'm going to vote to find that this is unconstitutional, this trap law. But that was a couple of years ago. John Roberts has always signaled he wants to do this. And now you have Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. And John Roberts has a free pass. He can vote with the so-called liberal wing of the justices.
So Amy Coney Barrett's been getting a bunch of heat for there were other opportunities for the Supreme Court to take up cases that challenge Roe v. Wade. And the right-wing anti-abortion, anti-choice groups had been pounding the table, being like, what did we lobby to get you onto the Supreme Court for, Amy Coney Barrett, right? This was supposed to be our issue here. And so now she's essentially caved to that, and it seems like they're going to... But this was always her inclination.
I don't think cave was really the word. I think what it is more...
I agree, but I mean, well, I think she wanted to initially do this, but I think there is some trepidation, even by the most conservative Supreme Court justices, to touch this. This shows that she eventually now decided, okay, this is safe to rule on.
The reporting is that John Roberts, in the first year that Brett Kavanaugh was on the Supreme Court, made sure that they weren't going to take any cases that were particularly controversial, because he wanted to give Kavanaugh an opportunity to sort of settle in.
Sounds kind of political.
Oh, yes. No. You talk to any expert on the Supreme Court, it's very political. There's no doubt in my mind that Roberts did not want to have a case come up this year. Remember, if you take this case in November, after Amy Coney Barrett's on, any case, you take it in December, it could be resolved this term.
Yeah.
John Roberts, very conscious of his legacy as the Chief Justice. There is no doubt in my mind that it was expressed at one point, let's give it a cooling down period. Let's not make it like the court is simply a political vehicle. However, Ian Millhiser has reported on Brett Kavanaugh. He had a piece that came out today. There was a couple of rulings that Brett Kavanaugh has written. One was about children, whether they can, minors can go to prison for life. That's Jones v. Mississippi. There was another case, Edwards v. Vannoy, which dealt with this change and whether it was retroactive. The point being that there were two precedents involved in this case that Kavanaugh just basically blew through.
Right.
And the way that Supreme Court justices work is they use different cases to build different rubrics of ultimate of future decisions. So this case will show how we can go about overruling precedent in this way. That case will show how we can go about overruling precedent in that way. And so when we come to a case that is very controversial and we're going to overrule precedent, we're not taking this methodology for the first time. We have already created a precedent of overruling precedent.
Yes.
And that's what's happening.
And the point, too, about this is that this Mississippi law was not their first attempt to get the Supreme Court to take this up, right? There have been a variety of Republican state legislatures that have passed similarly restrictive laws that are illegal, and they were doing so so they would get to the Supreme Court. They've finally broken through.
Yep. And so this is going to come up in the spring of 2022. And we'll probably hear oral arguments sometime around in October of next year. And, you know, this was to be expected. I mean, this was one of the greatest dangers of Donald Trump being president, was what he did with the judiciary. And he did it. It was predictable, and it is sad. But that is our time for today. We will be back tomorrow with more. Until then, if you're watching us on Peacock, we will see you then. And for those of you who are not watching us on Peacock, we will see you now. We're going to be joined in the fun half by Nomiki Konst of the Nomiki Konst Show.
Whoa.
Nomi will be here soon. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Oh, did you see that when you came in?
No.
Yeah, somebody sent me a Japanese Flobee.
Oh.
Yep.
I don't even see what you're pointing to. Oh, it's on the couch?
Yeah, it's a Japanese Flobee. Maybe I'll bring it up. Maybe I'll show it in a second. I'll go grab it.
Are you going to film yourself cutting your hair on the...
Well, I don't know. I'm starting to like my hair long. I don't know if I'm going to... But it also, you can also cut the hair of a dog. So that's on the picture of the box.
Okay, well, yeah.
Ronald Reagan sent me that.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have a dog to cut.
No. But I may get a dog hair. Just to cut the hair with the Flobee. But the point is, I don't know what the point of that was. I don't know why I brought that up. But justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Don't forget the AM Quickie, folks. Check that out as well. Where's Nomi? Let's bring her in. Nomi.
Hi. Hello. You always surprise me.
Really surprise you?
It's the way it comes in. It's not like, you know, some grand announcement. It's just like, boom, you're in. Hi. And then you have like 2 seconds to change your name.
You get some highlights. They look good.
Thank you. I went a little blonde. This is the first time I've done this. So thank you. You know, I'm sick of cover. It's the grays. Sam knows.
Sam definitely knows.
I'm going to give away the secret. I'm sick of it.
I may have to do that with my hair and do a little more highlights in there. I'm going to put in a little bit.
I think you have the highlights.
I have a little bit of the highlights. Yeah, I put them in a little bit. So who's on your show today?
Great question. So this is an interesting show today. We have Napoleon DeLegend and Joshua Kahn Russell are on for our panel. And then Craig Unger, who is the author of American Compromat. I know I'm going to get a lot from people about this, but oh well. How the KGB cultivated Donald Trump and related tales of sex, greed, power, and treachery. I think it's very juicy. I'm excited for this one. It's like reminiscing on old times.
There you go. I'm really interested in this, just how corrupt Bill Barr was during this era. This latest report, we'll talk about that, about him. The DOJ going to Twitter and trying to name of Devin Nunes's cow Twitter handle. That, to me, I find stunning. But Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian universe?
Yeah, two pieces of content last night. Derek Davison, David Griscom, and I talked about Joe Biden's foreign policy. That's released for patrons only, so patreon.com/leftreckoning if you want that. Derek is one of the best eyes on foreign policy there is. And also last night, I Twitch streamed Rocket League. I did pretty well, I must say. Scored quite a few goals, including an overtime game winner.
Is that a soccer game?
It's like a soccer game, but except instead of playing with a guy, you play with a little like remote control car.
And it's like Demolition Derby, but with soccer goals in a giant like Thunderdome.
Yeah. It's a lot like, but like hockey people keep telling me like hockey terms, like I can't even remember them, but I never played hockey, but I'm learning it pretty well. It's,
what do you mean? Hockey terms like you score? Like,
no, like stay in your lane, or that's not it, but like it's equivalent of that.
The offense.
Dump and chase.
Fill the gaps, I think is what it was said.
Tim Hortons.
All right.
They always sponsor hockey.
There yes. It is.
Twitch.tv/literary hangover. I'm going to be doing Monday nights at 11.
At 11 p.m.?
Oh, yeah, because I have to watch Go Off Kings first.
Jeez. All right. God, I love that lifestyle. I can't. I'm too old. I fall asleep at like 9:30 now. Let's take a quick break. Head into the fun half of the program. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
Ooh, the
and Sam, I got to get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.